Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you Texas Legislature Preview 2023. But first, some mental health headlines. The Hawk Foundation is seeking a postdoctoral fellow to focus on the intersectionality of racial justice and the drivers of mental health. This two-year fellowship is a project-based learning opportunity for a recent graduate who wants to apply their knowledge towards community well-being in Texas. We're seeking qualified candidates. For more information, visit our website, hogg.utexas.edu. In national news, New York City plans to hospitalize more mentally ill people involuntarily. This is according to a recent report by the New York Times. Mayor Eric Adams has directed first responders to hospitalize people they deem too mentally ill to care for themselves, even if they pose no threat to others. The move comes in response to a recent high-profile string of violent crimes involving the unhoused and rising crime in general. Mayor Adams and his supporters argue that the measure is necessary for public safety and to get people into treatment. But the plan is not without its critics. Norman Siegel, the former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union and co-founder of the Street Homeless Advocacy Project, is quoted in the story saying, quote, "Just because someone smells, because they haven't had a shower for weeks, because they're mumbling, because their clothes are disheveled, that doesn't mean they're a danger to themselves or others. And they're going to have the cops, of all people, make those decisions." Unquote. And in Texas news, construction of the new Austin State Hospital is nearing completion. According to a report by KXAN, the more than $300 million project should be finished next year. Austin State Hospital, or ASH, was built in 1857, the oldest institution of its kind in Texas. The remodeling was deemed an essential step toward creating a modern, recovery-oriented system of mental health care in Texas. Austin State Hospital is run by the Texas Department of Health and Human Services. It serves clients deemed having severe mental health challenges. They come from both criminal trials and civil cases. The new facility will be 375,000 square feet with 240 rooms and will feature therapy rooms, classrooms, exercise rooms, an arts and crafts room, and other amenities. And that's it for Mental Health Headlines. Subscribe to Mental Health Headlines on the Hawk Foundation website. Don't be left out of the loop. Get the latest mental health news right in your inbox. The 88th session of the Texas Legislature kicks off in January. It's an old tune by now, but it bears repeating. Ours is an increasingly polarized society. Mental health has long stood apart as an issue that seems to invite bipartisan cooperation. But will that be as true in 2023? What can we expect from the legislature, and what does it mean to do mental health policy in these troubled times? Joining us to offer some potential answers to these questions is the Hawk Foundation Policy Team. Allison Moore Bulware is our Director of Policy, Shannon Hoffman, our Policy Program Officer, and Angela Ott, our Policy Fellow. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks.
Allison, maybe you could kick us off by giving us an overview of what to expect this session, and then also what your hopes are for your wonderful team in particular.
Sure. Thanks, Ike. I think it's important for people to know that last session was really an unprecedented session. We only passed 1,300 bills, normally over 4,000 bills passed, and we had three special legislative sessions. And those are 30-day increments when only the governor can call the legislature back, and those focused mostly on controversial social issues. So I really want people to just know that that's what we're coming out of whenever we come back to this legislative session. There were a lot of bills passed last session that do impact community wellness. Things like access to different types of mental health services, as far as resources that are available to people. There was a lot of arguing over the budget. There were bills passed that restrict voting, as well as a lot of different social issues, you know, including critical race theory and how history is taught in schools. So we're kind of coming off of that, attitude. The last legislative session, a lot of anti-LGBTQ plus bills as well. And as we come into this legislative session, there is a budget surplus of $27 billion. So already you have everyone prioritizing what they want to ask for. Everyone is coming in, you know, with big ideas, right? However, we also are dealing with the tragedy of what happened in Uvalde in May. So we know that there's going to be a big focus on youth mental health as well as school mental health. However, there are also some lingering issues and a lot bubbling up at the local level regarding parental rights and education, what types of books schools have in libraries, and how educational materials are chosen and what kids are taught. We also are hearing that a lot of local communities are discussing social-emotional learning and whether or not that should be in schools. Now, we know that there's going to be continued conversation around reproductive health and abortion access, as well as voting, as those are things that a lot of legislators brought up whenever they were campaigning. And finally, we're coming back with a lot of anti-LGBTQ sentiment, especially at the local level regarding transgender issues. So all of those things coming back, we know that there are going to be conversations around all of those topics. So a big session, but what I want people to know is we also have this big budget surplus, so a lot of conversation around that as well.
Okay. And you mentioned LGBTQ, which I know is a major concern of yours, and something that, you know, that also we have talked quite a bit more about on the podcast in recent months. And so, you know, what major bills or developments will you be looking out for?
Yeah, I think what people might not know is that more bills were filed last legislative session related to LGBTQ plus issues and rights than ever before. And actually, Texas had the most bills that were filed that would have impacted LGBTQ plus rights compared to any other state. Over 30 bills would have restricted access to either services or regarding some type of rights for LGBTQ plus Texans. So what's important to know is that we're kind of coming into this session with all of that history behind us, but the only bill that actually passed last session was restricting transgender youth's access to playing sports. But there were other bills that were filed that we know are going to come back this session. The first is actually regarding what type of medical gender-affirming services can be provided in Texas. We know that there are bills filed that would restrict that access, and that really does impact transgender youth. We also know that there are going to be bills filed that would change the definition of child abuse to include providing gender-affirming care. And what's important for people to know is that that bill, as filed last session, was not just medical care. It also included counseling and mental health treatment. So, of course, that's something that our team is going to be watching and talking to offices about. And finally, we know that there are going to be a lot of conversations around how LGBTQ plus issues are taught in schools. We've seen this happen in other states, and with Texas, because we meet every other year, we know that legislators in Texas kind of follow what happens in other states, so we're anticipating that that's going to be a big topic this session. So again, the medical access, the child abuse definition, and then how LGBTQ issues are taught in schools.
Okay, so that's a nice segue. Shannon, you are our go-to when it comes to mental health in schools. So maybe you could just tell us about the ways that you're going to be trying to impact the legislative session.
Sure. I think what we've seen over the last few years is that everyone, in particular kids, have really been struggling. We saw mental health concerns before COVID, but they've really been exacerbated by the pandemic. So many kids have returned to school with the grief and trauma of losing someone that they really love, and continue to be exposed to anxiety after numerous school shootings. When we overlap that with school, it's a really unfair expectation to place on kids to prioritize learning and have their brains prioritize learning. So when we prioritize the school climate and that it's supportive for both students and teachers, everyone feels socially and emotionally supported, so everyone benefits. Texas has made some really dedicated efforts through investments in TChat, but that's really more of a responsive service when a child's already in crisis. And there is a school safety allotment available, but it's available for a wide array of things, including hardening, and really mostly hardening. It's really what schools have used it for so far. So what if we focus on a more upstream approach, ideally before crises occur, by supporting mental health and creating positive school environments? Currently in Texas, there are no dedicated dollars going directly to schools for the sole purpose of mental health. When we looked at the data and what's available to schools and what's being done in other states, there's a real opportunity for Texas. Other states like Ohio and Florida have done things similar, and some districts have prioritized figuring out how to do these things on their own. For example, there's a school social work program in San Antonio ISD. Killeen ISD has prioritized funding restorative discipline trainings, and there's a Linda Tutt program in Sanger ISD that really focuses on mental health. So there's some great examples already happening in different parts of the state. However, dedicated funding could take away that burden from schools on making those really difficult budget decisions and figuring out how are we going to fund this and sustain it, but also the time it takes away to find and apply for the funding. Again, it could take that burden away from schools. So I hope that Texas is able to create a school mental health allotment that's adequately funded to ensure all school districts can identify what the gaps and opportunities are in their community to support students and staff, and locally decide on the solutions. And I think that flexibility is really important because we know what's available and what works in North Texas may be very different than what's on the border and what works on the border. So I hope the difference being made is getting dollars to districts to improve mental health for both students and staff.
Okay. And so, Shannon, you have been with us since, 2018,
yeah,
I want to say. So you've,
I know. Yeah,
yeah, you've had two previous sessions under your belt. And I know that, throughout that time, substance use has also been, one of your main issues. So how would you rate over the time that you've been with us, the state's progress on that issue, and what more do you think needs to happen?
So I think Texas has made some good steps, but there's still a lot of progress to be made. We know that individuals with substance use conditions often fall in that coverage gap because they can't solely qualify for Medicaid based on their substance use. And there are income eligibilities and wait lists for state-funded services. And then just in general, there's stigma, transportation issues, other types of barriers for treatment in general. And then we also know too often that individuals may not get services until they're in an ER or in the criminal justice system. And so just in general, I think there's a movement to move away from this misconception that substance use is this linear step-by-step process, have someone complete 30 days of treatment, have them subscribe medicated assistant treatment. And there has been a shift to focus on more of recovery. And we've seen that peer support services are now a Medicaid reimbursed service, and there is a peer unit at HHSC. So we've seen progress, but we also know that there are still a lot of steps that we can take. I'm optimistic that we've seen leadership say they support some harm reduction strategies like fentanyl testing strips going into the next session. But we also know that there are still some limitations on protections for someone who calls 911 when there's an overdose. So all in all, I think we have made steps in the right direction, but there's still a lot of progress that can be made.
All right. Angela, this will be, I'm pretty sure, your first legislative session, at least with us. Mm-hmm. How Lots going on. Lots of, well, your vocal cords, perhaps, among other things, might be a little bit stressed.
Yeah.
Your feet, maybe as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of ground to cover at that very, very strange place. And so, how ready are you feeling for it all? And what are your thoughts going in?
I'm feeling pretty ready. So my last session, I was actually a staffer within the Capitol, so it'll be quite different. It'll be nice to not be in the building all the time, 24/7. But I'm feeling pretty ready. I think with HOG, it's nice because I get to focus on a lot of my passion projects and devote a lot of my time and energy into that without being within the Capitol at all times. I do have very comfortable shoes, though, so I think I'll be
nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. And then for the session, do you want me to talk about any kind of specific issues? I'm more than happy to.
I really want to talk about housing because that's been on my mind a fair amount lately for various reasons. I know it also is very important, a part of mental health that I don't think gets talked about often enough. Mm-hmm. So I would love it if you'd offer up some thoughts on that and what more you think the state could be doing as far as improving in that area.
Yeah. Well, for housing, I'll actually turn that to Shannon. Shannon's got a good grip on housing better than I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Shannon, sure.
I think that in Texas, there is, during the state hospital redesign, there has been more of a focus on, okay, we can never build enough beds. So how can we really support folks once they transition out of maybe traditional services into the community? I think where the state faces some challenges is a lot of things are at the federal level through HUD, the Housing and Urban Department.
Yeah.
And so I think when we're looking at housing from the mental health side, that's some challenges that the state faces in general. But I think there has been a push through the state hospital redesigns to prioritize housing and community supports. On the substance use side, last session there was a housing study done on recovery housing, which is really exciting to see the results of that report so that the state can take some steps to support and extend the opportunities of recovery housing in the state.
Okay. So Angela, let's turn it back to you. Mm-hmm. Just to fill in any gaps in our conversation that you think need being filled.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to know about the particular important issues that you are attending to during the session.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's top of mind right now, just because I got out of a meeting recently about it, is suicide prevention.
Yeah.
I know that we're seeing, it kind of ties in a lot with what Shannon's work is doing. We're seeing a big increase in suicidal ideation, suicide attempts in youth in Texas, particularly related to the pandemic and that isolation and the stress that a lot of these youth went through. One of the big issues that I'm working on is foster youth suicide. Unfortunately, foster youth have a much higher rate of suicide than the rest of the population. So that's actually one thing we're working on a lot, because we found that DFPS doesn't actually maintain records on suicide attempts or suicide ideation, which we're seeing is just a huge issue. And then in suicide prevention in general, data is just a big issue, because anecdotally we know it's happening, but if you don't have the data or the numbers, you can't really drive change in the legislature. So we're really hoping that we can get some better data on suicide in Texas and use that to drive change.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We've had a fair amount to say about particularly, the impacts of the pandemic on youth. Even though, like, there's so many factors that, that drive, whatever mental health phenomenon you're looking at. And so it's really hard to isolate, any particular one.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Do you have a going theory of your own as to what might be driving, the increase in things like suicidal ideation that you mentioned?
Sure. It's a good question. It's a big question, though. I think it ties a lot with what Shannon has talked about. It's with the pandemic, there was just a mass trauma, collective trauma that everyone experienced, along with isolation from either some people might see school as a refuge. Some might have been trapped at home with people who might be abusers. People have just lost a lot of their community and any kind of resources they might have relied on during the quote-unquote normal times before 2020.
Yeah.
And I think that this mass trauma that everyone has experienced has just kind of brought to the light what was already existing problems, but just kind of exacerbated what was already there.
Okay. So my last question, and this is for all of you. What will a successful session look like for you personally? We can go clockwise. So
I get to start.
Yeah, Ms. Hoffman, if you please.
So what would session look like, successful session look like? I think now this being my third on this side of it, I think I've seen like little steps here and there in progress in some places and maybe some steps back in other places. So I think really helping those light bulbs turn on for some of the decision makers on what things are and what they are not, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions and just lack of understanding around some issues, because they're getting a lot of information about a lot of things in a really short period of time. So for me, like in the areas that I focus on, for example, like schools and kids and substance use, what I was talking about, some of those gaps and challenges, just helping folks understand why these are important and looking at the long-term effects of things like getting dollars to schools and funding and prioritizing prevention and harm reduction, how moving more of in an upstream rather than a responsive kind of actions is actually in the long run better for individuals, systems, and communities.
Yeah, I think when you look at what happened last session, we really saw this concentration of attention and focus on issues that don't matter to the majority of Texans. So what we saw last session was there were bills that impact a very small group of people, like transgender youth, really taking the focus away from issues that all Texans care about. I think education is a big one, and youth mental health is a big one. If you talk to average Texans, they know that our youth are suffering. They know that, you know, schools need more supports. We have teachers leaving in droves. We have you know, infighting within school boards and communities on how history is taught and what books are in the libraries, when we know that ultimately the students need help. And so my hope is that the legislators can kind of put away some of these more controversial, flashy issues and really focus on meat and potatoes, you know, budget, talk about resources that actually impact Texans, talk about things like broadband, talk about education, obviously being such an important one, and just putting aside some of these more controversial issues to really think about what is best for all Texans and really think about community wellness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, I think realistically it relates a lot to what Shannon said, but hoping to kind of plant those seeds. I think I've heard time and time again that it takes about 3 sessions to get a bill passed, and I'm hopeful that we can plant the seeds with the legislature, especially I think with these kind of astonishing suicide rates that we're seeing just across the population in Texas, not only in children and youth, but I'm hoping that we can plant the seeds that this is a dire issue that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later.
Okay. We're trying to plant some seeds. Mm-hmm. That's true of, all of us who work in mental health, And the policy environment, unfortunately, has a lot of influence over what seeds ever sprout and when. But you know, we're still planning away. So yay us. This will not be the last by any means episode that we do. Looking ahead to the next several months, we're going to be revisiting policy issues and checking in on the policy team. Shannon, Allison, Angela, thank you so much for taking the time. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
Thanks, Ike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For closing thoughts, we are once again handing the mic over to a listener. Pamela Gauger of Houston, Texas, had this to say. I was always told not to tell anyone about what was going on with my mother as a child, and it was to stay behind closed doors. I became a peer in 2016, and that's when I started sharing my story. My mother would go into rages and try killing my brother and I, and she always would tell me that my brother was the devil. I held all this in for years. After becoming a peer, and ended up finding out that my mother was diagnosed with schizophrenia and her psychiatrist kept her on Xanax, and eventually I had to have my mother arrested and sent to rehab. After becoming a peer, I ended up finding out that my mother was diagnosed with schizophrenia and her psychiatrist kept her on Xanax, and eventually I had to have my mother arrested and sent to rehab. I share my story regarding my trauma and how it affected me as I got older. I feel that because I held all that in for so long, I became dependent on drugs and became homeless. I went to a rehab in 2006, and that is when I started healing. I feel that times have changed, but not fast enough for mental health. People need to talk and let others know they are not alone. Thank you, Pamela, for sharing your story with us. And that does it for this episode. We're glad that you could join us. If you have comments on anything, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu, especially thoughtful comments, such as Pamela's, will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Anna Harris, Daryl Wiggins, and Kate Rooney. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. Taking us out now is Anna's Good Vibes. Thanks for joining us.